This is Roots Pod, 2024 season preview, part two. Welcome into Roots Pod. This is Aaron here with John and Peter for the second half of our 2024 season preview. And we've already talked about the Roots themselves. Now we're going to talk about some of the stuff going on around the team, around the league, to kind of give everyone a little bit of context for what they're going to see on the field this season, and kind of some of the other stuff happening around the Oakland Roots this year, Oakland Roots in the USL this year. So a lot of stuff that we could talk about. We're going to try to focus on what we kind of think maybe is the most relevant, and the stuff also that we are most, I don't want to say qualified to talk about, because it's difficult to talk about me being qualified to do anything, but the stuff that we might have the most to say about, if that's a better way to put it. So we spent most of the off season hunkering down, you know, avoiding the cold and the rain, and watching continental European soccer, maybe some football and some basketball, instead of recording podcasts about the Oakland Roots, which means we haven't had a chance really to discuss what is effectively the biggest off-field issue for the Oakland Roots, and that is the field. A lot has happened in the last few months. So, John, why don't you just let's kick things off with you just kind of giving us a rundown of what has happened and where things stand. And I know this isn't necessarily going to affect the product on the field this season, but I think it's important to just sort of have this all in one place when we're talking about the Oakland Roots. So what's the deal right now?
Deal is, there is a lot of moving parts going on. As we know, the target overall is to get to Malibu lot. Originally it was 2025. We've realized now that that is looking more like 2026. Back in November, you'll remember that Lindsay Behrens, she was at Oakland City Council and announced that the team was eyeing the Coliseum for 2025. So that's big. You know, the news of the A's leaving town is what spurred them to do this. They said, okay, there's no tenant in 2025. Well, why not us? We sell just as many tickets as those guys, you know, why can't we?
Yeah, sometimes more.
Yeah. So here we are. I brought it up, you know, let's focus on the Coliseum here. There was another meeting with the Oakland Joint Powers Authority, Coliseum, you know, whatever, all the acronyms that you could think of, who oversee the grounds of the Coliseum. They had a big meeting scheduled February 16th, and that was cut short, canceled on short notice, because one day before, guess who said that they might play at the Coliseum going forward, or would be willing to play there? That is the Oakland A's, because of, you know, there's so many reasons, TV.
Yeah, no, because Major League Baseball was like, no, you're not playing in a triple A stadium for 3 years while you build a stadium you don't even have renderings for in Las Vegas. I swear to God, this guy, not you.
Yeah.
Fisher. No. What a
horse's ass.
Yeah. Thank you. The thing that was about to come out of my mouth, I wasn't sure we could publish.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that is the next step in the process. Hopefully we should be expecting to see some news on this over the next, I want to say the next 5 months are very important. Before we get into the midsummer months, the organization is going to need to know, what is the future? Can we play at the Coliseum in 2025? We have to be able to plan for this, because if we can't have Malibu Lot up and running in that time, we need a place to play. So I think Malibu is going forward. It's something that is wise for them to maybe, you know, take more time with. Might just be the hand that's dealt to them as well. We know how difficult it is to build things here. So, I mean, it's really all now. I mean, I think the city of Oakland is 100% on board with Oakland Roots. You see it all the time. It's just there is a common trend in things getting delayed at this grounds that is 50% owned by the city of Oakland and is 50% owned by the county of Alameda. You know, just because one percentage of people is on board with something doesn't mean that the other percentage of people is up to speed, as up to speed as them. So it's really, you know, it's really getting these two parties on the same page. And, you know, there are some interests lying around that, you know, are hard to say who is genuine and who's not. So that's where we are right now. I think we're going to be seeing some important months ahead as in regards to the Coliseum. I think they are very close to the finish line with this thing. It's hard to say how close they are to the finish line is on this thing. It's hard to say who exactly needs to sign off, you know, here and there. I mean, we all have an idea. We can throw names around, Nate Miley, but yeah, that's
pretty please, much please limit that. your accusations to public figures, please, for legal reasons. But it's interesting, right? I mean, they had planned for this 2025 debut at the Malibu lot down near the Coliseum. And then you start like putting pen to paper and shovel into dirt to figure out what's going to happen. And it's like, oh, okay, actually, maybe that timeline was not feasible. And then it looked like, you know, manna from heaven. Oh, the A's are just going to dip. So look at that. We have a whole stadium that we can just plop into, right? I mean, how many of these teams in this league play in baseball stadiums? None of them are as impressive as the Oakland Coliseum. That would have been great.
I mean, it gives the Roots opportunity to see what their maximum is, what their maximum reach is. You have BART, you have so much accessibility from public transportation. You can make it 20,000 seats, you can make it 15, you can make it 10. You know, it is a great opportunity to say that we can sell on, you know, comparable stage to other MLS teams that are nearby.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Hopefully that's what would happen. It's also the case that as much as everyone wants Fisher out, people don't want the A's to leave. So if the A's are like, we would like to stick around, right? I mean, you're gonna do what you need to do to make that happen. And you've made this point on I think the blog and definitely on social media at this point. It doesn't mean that the Roots can't use the Coliseum in 2025, but it does mean that there's some logistical issues that would need to be worked out. The biggest one is not so much how you handle the field conversion, but who pays for it. Because that's going to be a pretty large expense. And it's something you're going to run into at least, 17 times?
Yeah, it's something they could definitely be able to plan around. I want to say that. I'm hoping they could have the foresight to plan a schedule for 2025 around each other. But yeah, the issue would be field conversion. I think the A's know that the Roots couldn't pay that. I'm hopeful that the city understands that because they need to. Same with the county. You know, the A's have leaked to various media groups that, oh yes, they would be willing to cooperate with Roots and Soul. Does that entail that they are okay with paying that? Or does it mean that no one's approached them about that yet?
Right. Cooperate is such a weasel word in this context, especially since the A's are owned by the same guy who owns the Earthquakes and who might feel like there's a bit of a, what is the word I want to use here? Like it's some competition, you know, in terms of the local soccer market between the Roots and the Earthquakes on some level, at least.
I mean, it's not going to be funny if he ends up finding a way to screw the Roots, but it's so funny that guy made the Earthquakes so shit that they like completely frittered away the East Bay fan market. I was talking to a guy today at the Hooligans event who was telling me that like he is still a San Jose Quakes season ticket holder and he doesn't even go to the games because they suck and he likes the Roots better.
It's a market with a lot of potential, and I guess, you know, you'd love it for the Roots to be able to tap it if the Quakes are just going to fritter it away. But so a lot of moving parts there, and there's going to be a lot of news throughout the season because this is multiple levels of local government, which means things are going to move slowly and then all at once. And in interesting and unforeseeable ways, too, because you have so many personalities involved. The bottom line, I think you're saying, John, is we should be optimistic in the Roots playing and the Soul. Let's say Roots and Soul, at least for the moment, playing at the Coliseum in 2025. So Pioneer Field in 2024. The Oakland Coliseum in 2025, and then on a modular stadium on the Malibu lot in 2026. At the moment, we can at least be optimistic about that.
I think you can definitely be optimistic about that. I think that is the overall plan. I think that's the overall expectation, is to be Coliseum 2025, Malibu lot 2026. And I would hope to say people can bank on it, but you never know these days.
Absolutely not.
You never know these days. Yeah.
If I could sneak one and last thing in about the Quakes. The Quakes played on the day that we're recording this, and a goal was scored by Preston Judd. He'll always hold a special place in my heart as the source of my most esoteric joke.
And let's be real, that is a competition that is pretty hot. There's a lot of challengers for the most esoteric joke in the previews.
They're only esoteric.
All right. The other thing that is worth knowing about the field, right, is that we will not be playing on the unforgiving Cal State East Bay turf this year. We will be playing on the field that was hastily purchased to replace the patchwork quilt field a few years ago, when the Republic complained about it. So that's coming back, which should be really good because we heard several times near the end of the season that Roots players hated this turf, hated the East Bay, the turf at Pioneer Field. And it really felt like it was getting into their heads on some level. You might recall that their home record was fairly lackluster even before the collapse at the end of the season. This was a team whose best performances all seemed to come on the road. And whether or not that's the field, you gotta think there'll at least be some psychic boost to not playing on a turf that everyone seemed to agree was way too bouncy, way too hard, just not fun to be on. So that's good too, I hope. It's at least something to know, you know?
Well, I'm not ruling out that the Blues Clues Field, as we've all coined it, is not bouncy. I think it's going to be more bouncy, but I think it's going to be more forgiving. I mean, there's definitely one thing I will remember about CSUEB's field is just how hard it is. It's like playing on concrete. You know, I go down there every game standing on the field and, you know, my feet hurt. I mean, I know I'm in my mid-30s, but it still hurts. So, I mean, you can feel just how hard it is. You can see how fast the pitch is with how the ball rolls. So maybe the Blues Clues Field helps in that regard. I don't think it helps us get television time. Neither does CSUEB's field because they're using lights that are like from
this. Yeah, I was going to say it has nothing to do with the field. It's everything to do with the lights.
Yeah, the lights are.
Yeah. You might have caught that the national broadcast schedule has been put out for the USL and the Roots are nowhere to be seen. And it was never going to the home game was never going to happen. The lighting situation at Pioneer Stadium is completely inadequate for TV. I guess the next thing to know, or the next thing, another thing that is worth knowing going into the season is there's some changes to the USL. Two clubs have left us, and it's both unfortunate for different reasons. They're both out of the Western Conference. So San Diego Loyal folded at the end of last season. And this is one we did have a chance to sort of discuss. It is unfortunate because, well, It's unfortunate that we're losing a team from San Diego, but also because it looked like the MLS had said we're going to move into San Diego, and the next thing that happened was the Loyal folded, and it's not going to be good long term for the USL if the MLS just has to talk about throwing its weight around for there to be materially adverse effects for the USL. Now, it might not have been that. It might have been Loyal's inability to find anywhere to build a practice facility or a stadium. But you have to wonder, if they were the only game in town, if they would have had that issue.
I bet that they, like, polled their kit sponsor and their TV broadcaster and their season ticket holders and said, like, are you going to keep sponsoring us? Are you going to keep playing our games? Are you going to keep coming to our games? And I feel like probably a critical mass of those people didn't give them the answer that they wanted. And, you know, I don't think it was just talking about going there, because, yeah, they made the announcement and then Loyal folded, but they had been in negotiations to buy Loyal and to buy Loyal's IP. And so that means, you know, like, the one person who knew how serious MLS was about it was the guy negotiating a sale of his IP to them.
Yeah, that's so fair.
I don't know. There are a limited number of markets that can actually get into MLS, you know, and that makes me less worried about more folding. Like, you know, Pittsburgh is probably big enough to host an MLS team. Sacramento obviously is, but MLS can't keep growing. You know, that is going to run out of available slots for games.
They're what, 29 teams right now or something? 32 is about where every single professional sports league in North America is. It's hard to see how MLS could be bigger than that if they're not going to embrace promotion and relegation, and they seem pretty dead set against that. Right, they've got their developmental squads, most of which aren't located in, like, different markets either, so that's not really doing anything for you. The other team to leave us after last season is Rio Grande Valley, and this is another this is maybe disappointing for other reasons. A huge population down there in South Texas, who you would expect would be represented by a professional soccer club at as high a level as you could get. The problem is that it takes, you know, because you have to fly in, basically. It's not like there's advanced rail infrastructure to get you down to Edinburgh, Texas. You know, it's difficult for teams to get there, but they're flying out 17 times a year. That's got to be a huge drain on the budget. And I guess the writing is on the wall for that, especially since, you know, it is a huge population. It's also very spread out. I'm sure many of those sports fans down there are loyal to Houston teams, because that's the closest major media market served by most of the big four leagues. So that one's rough, but they will not be with us for the 2024 season. In their place in the USL, we've got two new teams in the USL: Rhode Island FC, which is just a full-on expansion team, I believe, and then North Carolina FC, who most recently won a lower division championship, I believe. So they're bringing a squad from League One up to USL Championship. Rhode Island is just slotting in there. And because that's two teams in the East, two teams from the East are moving to the West. So we'll see Memphis twice this season and FC Tulsa twice this season. So that's, who knows what that's going to mean? Probably nothing, really. It's unfortunate we don't have that away day in San Diego. I think that's the most immediate impact. But those are the changes to USL. And since we're talking about a change that's kind of precipitated by the MLS, there's also some updates, we'll call them updates, to the Open Cup format this year. Instead of having all of the MLS teams in the Open Cup, we get eight. And I have been trying to figure out how they picked these eight. It appears to be the defending champion plus the top MLS teams that are not involved, not already involved in the CONCACAF Champions League. That's the best I can figure. So there'll be eight MLS teams. Fortunately, probably for us, is that one of them is the San Jose Earthquakes. which means the dream of an Oakland San Jose MLS draw is alive, but it kind of sucks that the MLS sort of thumbed their nose at the US Open Cup and the US Open Cup had to sit there and take it. I mean, given the way the MLS treats the rest of US soccer, it's one of the cooler parts of the US soccer experience. And for the MLS to just kind of shit on it is incredibly frustrating.
And that the US Soccer Federation can't do anything about it.
Can't do anything about
it. Because it's like, I mean, what are you going to do? Like, sanction MLS? Like, they're just more important than the US Soccer Federation, which is, you know, I guess, like, runs the US men's national team and the US women's national team and is otherwise like a suggestion box.
Yeah. It just doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel to me like it would be great for the MLS to have this much power if there's only going to be like 30 major professional soccer teams for a country of this size, you know, with this kind of a base of soccer fans. It feels like we should have way more clubs that are in the conversation, and the MLS just appears dead set on stamping out everyone else, which is just fucking annoying. You know, in other examples of their assholery, right? I believe they've locked out their refs and are employing scabs who I mean, it if the MLS was a bigger deal, I think you'd probably hear more about this along the lines of when the NFL had those replacement refs about a decade ago, and it was just madness.
I double checked the Pro Soccer Referee Association website. That's the organization that represents MLS refs, USL refs, and they are not asking fans to boycott games. They are asking fans, if you are supportive of them, of organized labor broadly, to make that known, maybe to chant it, but they are not, it's not a picket line. They're not asking you to stay out, even of MLS games, much less USL games. So I think our listeners would want to know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So bottom line with all of this, of course, is MLS are assholes. That's total, the broad takeaway here.
Total buttheads.
Yeah. So that's the weird kind of stuff floating in the background. I guess the only thing really left to talk about as we prepare for the 2024 season is kind of who we expect to come out on top in the USL, other than the Oakland Roots, obviously. Who will go undefeated, will be invincible this year, obviously. But who else is in the running for, you know, top home draws in the first round of the playoffs in both conferences? And really, realistically, where do we see the Roots slotting into all of this? Assuming that the best case projections we have for them don't pan out. Honestly, it's not too interesting here. The best teams from the last few years are going to be the best teams again, by all appearances. There was a run in the playoffs last year from Charleston Battery that kind of surprised some people, but for the most part, in the East, Louisville City and Tampa Bay Rowdies. I mean, you can almost set your watch by it.
Always good.
Yeah, and in the West, San Antonio FC, Sacramento Republic, Phoenix Rising. You know, it's really hard. Everyone is trying to break up that sort of oligopoly, for lack of a better word. They are the cream of the crop year in and year out, and it really doesn't look a whole lot like this year will be much different. I don't know, if I had to pick one team other than the Roots who might break up this group that has a hold on the West, I think I'm going El Paso. Made a lot of changes over the off season. They were pretty good last year. They've been pretty good in the past. I just don't see why they wouldn't be good again. They have a pretty talented roster, but I think, you know, it's Sacramento and San Antonio until someone says otherwise, basically. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I think that's right. I mean, El Paso went and brought in a Tumi Moshabani, which is one of the guys from San Diego that it would have been nice for the Roots to look at. He may have commanded a salary that the Roots couldn't compete with. And they signed Justin Dillon, who tormented us at San Antonio. And those are great signings. I recognize the other names of the people that they brought in, but I couldn't tell you where they play on the field. I think El Paso will be good. You know, Orange County brought almost everyone back except Milan Olasky. You know, it's hard to say that one player is worth like 20 points in the final standings, but if there's any one player who's worth 20 points, it might be Milan Olasky.
And Milan Olasky on that Orange County team.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a beautiful offense to watch. It was a really stout team with a guy who could score a ton of goals.
Yeah.
And if you're really taking a risk by replacing the guy who can score a ton of goals.
Mm-hmm.
But they do also have a track record of success. Phoenix, I think it's Sacramento or San Antonio until someone says otherwise. Phoenix is the defending Western Conference champion. I think they were, sixth in the regular season and then went on the run in the playoffs? I mean, when I say, this is a very American way of saying they're the Western Conference champion. They won the Western Conference in the playoffs.
And the USL.
And the USL, yeah. Phoenix has taken kind of an interesting route here in that they appear to be building the Oakland Roots 2022 roster, as they now feature Funmayor, Azucar, Rito, Jose Hernandez, and Eric Formella. Really getting the gang back together there. Without Juan Guerra, who put the roster together and then went and took a job with Houston Dynamo. Can't relate, honestly.
They did lose Danny Trejo, Carlos Harvey, and Manuel Arteaga. And, you know, Danny Trejo was important for them. Sorry, I interrupted your train of thought there.
What I was going to say is we saw here at Oakland that Guerra put together a roster that wasn't necessarily competing at the highest levels of the Western Conference, but was obviously capable of winning games in one-off situations. And I feel like Phoenix is probably your best bet to come in third, right? They're going to have a very good roster. I just don't feel like they're at the same level as Sacramento and San Antonio. Mm-hmm. But they're full of guys who you're like, it's Rito and Azucar on their own. We've seen them. You let them get loose in a game and you can't come back from it. That's just how it is.
Right. I mean, yeah, they lost their striker, but they also added Remy Cabral, who you'll remember at part of Los Dos, was pretty impressive there. Still a young guy. So I think that fills their striker role and kind of work around that with Derek Formella. I mean, they had a good offseason. Just like you said, with those other teams, Sacramento, San Antonio, Phoenix, those are guys you could expect to be top three. We did see that Sacramento Republic admitted that they lost 2-1 to Oakland Roots in their preseason game. We've heard that both first teams got minutes there and, a majority of the minutes. So that's encouraging. Hey, but,
very encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you guys are also correct. El Paso, very good offseason. You see all the players that they added. I want to throw another one in there. Colorado Springs. You'll see that they added Ronaldo Damas. So that's an obvious, pretty good offseason move right there then alone. So the question is, how do we compare to these other teams that came in? Memphis, Tulsa. Tulsa's got a pretty good team. They added Philip Goodrum, you remember, last season. You know, Orange County's an interesting one. You replace Milan Olasky with Ethan Zubak, who had about 50 appearances over the last couple years or a few years in MLS, I think from LA Galaxy to Nashville. Only scored 3 goals during that time, so he's 27. This is a big part of his career. They're going to be asking him to come in and score goals. I mean, obviously, you add this guy from MLS, you replacing your marquee forward, this guy is going to be important. So it's all about, where do Roots slot in amongst these rosters? Like last podcast, I'll stick to it. You know, I think every team can beat any team on any given game day. So, you know, it's almost a crapshoot with from 4 on down to, what would you say, 9? about where these teams slot in. It's going to be a big shuffle.
You have Sacramento and San Antonio at the top. And I think for me, I'm going Sacramento over San Antonio because they've had less roster turnover in the offseason. I think San Antonio is bringing in a couple more people than Sacramento is. You have Vegas and Monterey Bay on the bottom. And where you fit in the middle is probably a function of how clinical you are, when you get injuries, you know, who you play in the East Coast on the road as opposed to at home. You know, that kind of stuff. When you get hot, you know, are you playing, when you get hot, are you playing the teams around you in the table such that you can gain points on them? Or are you getting hot and playing Las Vegas? You know, a team that you should, I don't want to say this too strongly, but a team that you ought to be able to beat regardless of whether you're on your best game that day. You know, so I think between what's that? That's going to be between 3 and 10, basically, 3rd and 10th spots in the table. Anybody could be anywhere.
I mean, this whole where we shake out in the West, I mean, it's hard to say. I definitely agree. Bottom guys, bottom tier is going to be Las Vegas, who may be improved under your boy there,
Joey Bats.
Yeah,
that's right. Now the team is now fully owned by Jose Bautista, which is, that's the greatest ownership situation in the USL, bar none.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, Las Vegas on the bottom, I think Monterey on the bottom too. And then it's, you know, how these other teams slot up. I'm not most impressed by New Mexico's additions. I could see Roots going above them. Orange County, I think Ethan Zubak has to work out there. Thomas Among has to stay productive. Who knows if that happens? I mean,
yeah, Orange County is going to be tough to play through, but if one or two goals is likely to win you a game against Orange County, I just don't know if I could be a believer long-term in what they're doing there. The Roots appear to have set themselves up pretty well to make the playoffs. Now, we said that last year a lot, and it didn't end up happening, so we don't eat our words here. But with a little better preparation for international breaks, a little better luck in the injury department, and a full off season and a full season to gel with guys like Yesiel Cedeño and Babacar Nye, and then we just sort of have to cross our fingers that that back line is better than it was last year, which it certainly could be. You got to figure the Roots are set up very well to get into the playoffs. And then, like we said, anything could happen.
Yeah. It's all the, for me, it's what hinges on the success is the service to Johnny and to Miche, or Mish, as I've heard they call him. So, I mean, that's my, I guess, prediction on where things lie is how productive our forward line is, and also how the service to them, you know, because I don't think Johnny got a lot of good service. I think he also has to put away the easier goals, and you know, if they do that, you know, we'll be okay.
If it doesn't work, like if it's a bad season, I feel like we already know why it would, like why that would be the case. You know, we're asking three center backs who are, or four center backs, of which three will play, who are talented but had never met before mid-January, to like come in together and be the defense. You know, the prime defensive responsibility, because the wingbacks have other stuff to worry about. We have a midfield that hasn't changed from last season, when it was maybe the worst midfield in the Western Conference. I mean,
when Hackshaw wasn't in the midfield, it was, yeah,
exactly. And if Hackshaw's playing in midfield, that equation changes. Even when he was in midfield, it still
wasn't inspiring.
It didn't have, it had some bad games, you know, cause like most of the good midfield performances last season had Joseph Nane, who is now on the sidelines. And we're once again asking to get goals out of Johnny Rodriguez and a striker no one's ever heard of. And I, you know, like we were talking about last week, I think that there's a case to be made for what they're looking at with those two guys. But like, that is what we ran out last season. It's kind of what we ran out in 2022 as well. Otar turned out to be awesome. But I mean, even then, we also had Darek Vermeulen then, you know, so that's like even fewer resources. So I don't know. I mean, like, the downside is obvious. I think that this defense looks good. I'm curious to see what Sheree can do. I think the midfield is better set up for success with Hackshaw in there. But my goodness.
I got two questions for you guys. We're going to go. Are you going to go over, under, plus four more goal or assist contributions from Johnny Rodriguez? So he finished with 13 last season. So over, under 17. And then Sheree, over, under 10 goal contributions. What do you guys
think? I'm going to go under 17 for Johnny. I don't know who he's assisting necessarily. So that's going to mean four more goals, and I guess it's possible, but I'm not. I mean, that would mean 16 goals, which is a pretty strong return for USL striker. If I were a betting man, I'd say under, but I can see him eclipsing that number. It just, I feel like it's just slightly less likely that he doesn't. Slightly more likely that he doesn't. Slightly less likely that he does than he doesn't.
I think I'm taking the under on both. I don't think he has great assist numbers historically. And like Aaron said, I mean, I could fully see him getting 15 goals and one assist or something that like brings him under that number, but it's still a great season that we're very happy with, you know?
Yeah, just for reference, last year, the Golden Boot had 20. Cal Jennings was second with 19. There were two at 17 and one at 16. So if he's in that range, he's one of the best Johnny, that is one of the best strikers in the league.
I think for Sheree, if I'm putting money on this, I'm going under. I also, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the team still tried to go and get another striker. And so if they end up cutting his minutes, and so therefore I'm protecting my investment by betting the under there.
Yeah, my logic with Sheree was Pelaez ended the season with 8 goals, zero assists. So I think that if
the question is, do we think this guy's going to be better?
Yeah, and if this season is successful, if we're pushing for playoff spots, you know, I think both of these, I think Johnny has to press 20 goal contributions, and Sheree has to hit double digits as well.
I think I buy that. And I'd have a hard time believing that the guy who played so well against Austin FC would somehow be worse in front of goal than Anwar Pelaez. I feel like Sherry's a better bet there. So from that perspective, I think you got to take the over on the 10 that you're saying. Now, maybe we do bring in someone else. The other thing that would really help is goal contributions from the midfield. I know that's being very greedy. Very, very greedy. I don't want to come off too greedy. But last year, let's see, Lindo had 4. Memo, who's semi-midfield, that's 3. And then of the people returning after that, Reed had 2. Hackshaw 1, Tamakis 1, Cedeno 1. So I feel like really those are the numbers that need to come up more so than the numbers we were getting out of the forwards. Just having a threat from somewhere else on the pitch would be really useful. Now, we could also try to preview the week 1 match against Indy 11. I don't know. We're like guessing about what the Roots are going to do. There's no way we could possibly tell you anything useful about what Indy 11 is going to do. Not well, even going to try. Peter's going to try.
Oh, I'm going to try. We're going to do it. Because I was already trying to write a preview post anyway. They have 2 good strikers. That's what you need to be worried about. They have Sebastian Gonzatti, who played for Tampa for a number of years. He was at Indy last year on a team that didn't do anything against the Roots. The Roots beat Indy 3-0 last season in Indianapolis, where I, as I recall, Indy like barely posed a threat. But the Roots had three goals, one of which was assisted by Darek Formella, one of which was scored by Darek Formella, and one of which was scored by Eduardo Rito. So those guys aren't Roots anymore.
That doesn't sound quite so sustainable for us now.
No. We hope that none of those guys score in the game this weekend. So Gonzani was on that team, and that obviously wasn't enough. He did score 11 goals last season, which I think is down for him, but he's... he was good for Tampa for several years. And then they signed Augie Williams. After Augie Williams helped hammer them for Charleston Battery in the first round of the playoffs, he now plays for Indy, where he can no longer hurt them, at least directly. And that's a scary front, too. That said, I'm not sure what I think about their defense. And I think that there's questions about whether Danny Barbier is actually going to be appearing for them in week one. Their defense was good last season. Most of it came back. They signed two new defenders who are both MLS cusp guys, Danny Barbier and this guy, Aiden, spelled differently than you would expect, Aiden Stanley, at left back.
They have two people named Aiden with both semi-unconventional spellings on the roster?
That's exactly right. An Auden and an Eden.
Oh, that's spectacular.
That's great. It's good stuff.
The other one is Aiden Quinn, the midfielder who... He was at Phoenix, I think, a few years ago. Feels like we've been playing that guy every single year.
So, you know, their lineup, you know, they made the playoffs in the East last year, but they also got just smashed out in the first round, and the Roots beat them last season. So, you know, I mean, and a lot of it is the same team. They no longer have Solomon Asante, who has just been bouncing around for several years since being terrifying in the Roots' first season. When Asante was on Phoenix.
Yeah, they're not relying on Douglas Martinez for goals at any point this season.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I think that Indy 11 is not a terrible matchup for us in the first week. We'll see. You know, this Gonzotti, Augie Williams tag team might end up being really scary, but I'm kind of glad we're going to see it week one and not after that when they've had more time together.
Yeah. Yeah, and when it's going to be like 55 degrees and raining in Hayward.
Right.
I mean, that's got defensive slog written all over it, which probably favors the Roots in this game against two established USL forwards. So I guess there's our attempt at a preview. That was pretty good, Peter. I appreciate that. That was pretty good.
Some of it was even true.
That's all we aim for on this podcast. A modicum of honesty. All right, John. So why don't you give us your prediction about how the Oakland Roots are going to win this game?
We're going to win. I've never predicted a loss, and that continues again. I wonder what this would be, what the record would be if all of my predictions came true. We'd be the greatest soccer team.
I feel like you just told us what the record would be. They'd be 34-0-0 last year.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think there's much wondering involved.
I mean, like, collectively, you know, from when we started this podcast, you know, we'd be like 68-0. I mean, it'd be amazing. Anyways, Roots win 2-1 with 2 second half goals.
Johnny. Wow. And where are they coming from?
Johnny and Sherry. We're going to get instant rewards for this
company. Instant rewards. All right.
I was also going to go 2-1. I'm going to say, just to change things up, I'm going to give a goal to one of our new center backs, one of our new large lads.
Oh, nice. I'll go 3-2. I know I just said that this has defensive slog written all over it, but Maybe the rain messes with the keepers more than it does with the forwards. I think we'll see something out of Johnny. His interview at Media Day seemed like a guy who's locked in, who's really focused on success this season. And I bet that pays off immediately. So we'll see a goal out of him. I like Cedeno for a goal. I think, especially if we're moving some of our wingers towards the middle of the pitch, I feel like that could actually unlock him. So I like him for a goal, and then I like an own goal. You know, some kind of scrum happening off a free kick or a corner kick or something that bounces in off the back of Adrien Dispe or something. That's what I'm thinking. That's the third for the Roots. With the ones we give up, I'm sure going to be, I think it's going to be a combination of one that's incredibly frustrating and one that's like, what are you going to do? That's just what Augie Williams does.
Predicting an own goal is insanity. That's one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
I love it. I don't think there has been an own goal prediction ever on the podcast. That's a first. And if you get it right, yeah, I would say, man, you got to start betting or something.
Yeah, no, we're taking this podcast on the road to Las Vegas the next week if that's what happens. All right. So bring your rain gear and your warm Under Armour gear, because it's not going to be, I think, altogether fun to be outside in Hayward on Saturday, except for the fact that we finally get to watch the Oakland Roots in person once again and listen to the glorious tuba stylings of Peter Bloom. Who I hope your practice has gone well, and I'm excited for this addition to the supporter section this year. I think that'll bring something really exciting to the experience. So pop on by to watch the Roots and listen to Peter play the sousaphone. I think those are equal attractions this coming Saturday. Oakland Roots Indy 11, kickoff of the 2024 season. Very exciting. We'll see you there. And until then, up the Roots.